everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Anthony's Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Sipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Levin, and Thomas Henderson. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good.
I'm about to watch some Sunday night Mets baseball. So
and,
not
by,
great.
And by watch, we mean put on TV, mute, and turn on the radio, of course.
Yup.
Get hyped. Get hyped.
There's zero chance I listen to any part of this broadcast.
Are you telling me you don't want to listen to A-Rod?
Mm-mm. I don't.
Alternate dimension Mets owner, A-Rod.
Oh, no.
Would he still be doing the game? Because I hope yes.
Probably.
That he's just biasly announcing a game that of a team that he owns.
He's like, hold on, guys, one second. He leaves the booth. He fires the GM and manager.
Man, I really think the Mets need to change X. Hold on a minute.
Yeah. You know, I think they should go to a lefty here. He just puts himself on mute. A lefty comes in. Wow, really good move by...
Oh, boy. I don't know that I'm going to be able to stay awake through this game. I'm, like, exhausted today for reasons.
Yeah, I hear you. I will apologize in advance. My voice is kind of screwed up, but... dedication. We need to do this podcast for all of our listener out there.
Listener. Well, what's Ringo going to do on his, like, morning commute?
Exactly. He needs something to do.
He'd be furious. Yeah, I don't blame him.
All right, so for promote extend trade this week, on this date back in 1957, Walter O'Malley, he met with officials from the city of Los Angeles, and they basically told him that they'd give him the lands around Chavez Ravine. And, if he agreed to bring a ball club, then he did. So we're going to have a modified promote extend trade this week. Thomas, you are another Brooklyn boy, so you probably get this. So promote extend trade this week. You are in a room with Walter O'Malley, Adolf Hitler, and Joseph Stalin.
Oh,
you have a gun with two bullets. Who is getting traded?
Is traded? What's traded in this context?
Killed.
Okay. You get. I can't. Look.
This took a turn.
The Dodgers should still be here, but I can't let Hitler and or Stalin survive. In
is
good
there an
conscience.
Option to shoot Toby twice?
No, the real answer is you line all three up.
One bullet.
Oh.
We really need to test this. Merit.
Yeah, well, that depends on the caliber of the gun, right?
That's true.
Assuming it's where it's in America, we could get any type. So,
also very true.
I mean, if Steve's giving us, like, a wimpy little pea shooter, we're not going to have any penetrance. If Steve somehow has, like, a Desert Eagle lying around, bullet, we're done.
Listen, this is America. Like he said, we can get anything.
I'm sorry. I thought this was America.
You want a bazooka? You get a bazooka.
All right. That's not really a bullet anymore.
Listen, not according to the Second Amendment.
From complex to America.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Well, yeah, the correct answer would be to kill everybody, so that works.
The technical
answer.
Yeah,
that is a good one. The technical answer, though, would be to shoot Walter O'Malley twice.
Uh-huh, right. That's the Toby in this situation.
All right, so let's move on now to the way too early draft updates. And we're about halfway or so through the high school and college seasons. And industry sources are kind of getting a clearer picture about, you know, how players have performed and who's doing what and what teams like who. And we're starting to get some mock drafts from reputable sources out there. So Baseball America, they had one this week. And Carlos Collazo is right now projecting the Mets to pick Gunnar Hoglund, who is a right-handed pitcher from Ole Miss. And over at MLB Prospect Pipeline, Jonathan Mayo, he is projecting the Mets to pick Ryan Cusick, a right-handed pitcher from Wake Forest University. Honestly, I'm not too excited about either one of those guys. I don't know. Neither one of them feel, like, flashy enough. You know what I mean?
Both of those choices are extraordinarily meh.
Yeah, like if the Mets took either one of them, I wouldn't be annoyed necessarily, but both guys are just kind of like, eh, like you want something better at 10.
Yeah.
I guess of the two of those guys, I prefer Cusick because he throws harder.
He reaches like high 90s. Hoglund's got a great name there, though.
He it's does, like yeah, that's Hogland. The thing.
Yeah, we could work with that.
He's also had some injury history, so that also is a little concerning. But maybe, you know, maybe we still have like a month and a half, 2 months, whatever, of baseball to go. So we'll see.
I also feel like most mocks just assume the Mets are going to choose another college polished starter. It's like been a stereotype as long as I can remember.
Like, the Mets always like college starters, so we'll go here.
Yeah, I mean, both those mocks had House going to the Orioles, and I think Castillo was gone in both of them as well. Was he gone in the MLB?
No. One of them, he was at, like, 12, I think, or 13.
Yeah, I don't think we've talked a little bit about our questions about Del Castillo. I don't think I'd take either of these pitchers over him still.
No, I would not. All right, well, let's talk about our guys now. And my guy, Judd Fabian, he went in four games. He went 6-14 with a double, 3 home runs, 5 walks, and get this, 1 strikeout.
Only one?
1 strikeout.
Baby. Wow.
What's his strikeout rate on the season now, Steve?
Uh-oh. On the season, it's actually not that bad. Well, for the season right now, he's hitting 267, 372, 764, and that's with 16 homers. And the walkout to strike ratio is not really that bad. It's basically 2-1. He has 27 walks and 55 strikeouts, which is not terrible. You know, it's manageable, and it's a lot better than it was like a month ago. But despite that, in both of those aforementioned mock drafts, Fabian fell out of the first round in both of them. Nobody thinks that he's a first rounder right now. But for what it's worth, the Mets' second pick is at 46, and those drafts, the one that goes further, the MLB one, they're projecting Fabian at 49 right now. So maybe he could get drafted by the Mets, but in the second round maybe. That would be pretty cool. That would actually be like a massive, I think, steal if that did somehow happen. But, you know, if he keeps hitting like he did this week, then I think his name might start getting bandied around again in the first round discussion. Speaking of bona fide first rounders, how did Brady House do this week?
So they had a doubleheader on 29th, and I'm just, what day of the week? That was a Thursday, I think, if I know the dates correctly. No stats for the second game, but he had 2 hits in the first with a double, a run. Just not a lot of game action this week. It's just not a lot more we could say in terms of superlatives for House at this point. Like, he's unfortunately probably played his way out of the Mets range at this point. And the fact that both of these mocks have him going to the Orioles kind of speaks to perhaps that's the whispering about who the Orioles are zeroing in on. So I'm no longer particularly optimistic he's going to be on the board when the Mets come up at 10.
Well, if he's going to the Orioles, maybe he'll say, I don't want to do myself for the next 7 years. I don't want to sign with you. Someone else, please.
Help.
Help. Thomas, how was Andrew Painter this week?
So, Andrew Painter, the last time he pitched, from what I see, is, because I'm going to go through the box scores one more time just to check, was the 22nd, because they've been in the playoffs now, because they started so early, because he's in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
He threw 6 no-hit innings on the 22nd, striking out 13 and walking 4, and they won 2-1 in a combined no-hitter. Yes, they gave up a run in a combined no-hitter. In the 6th inning, someone came in, hit someone, walked 3, and then got yanked, and then I'm assuming there was a strikeout and then an out. So they got out of the bases loaded jam with not giving up a hit. And then after that, on the 27th, someone else pitched a complete game no-hitter, actually. Yeah, someone pitched a complete game no-hitter, so someone threw a no-hitter. And on the 29th, they won 10-0, and I don't think they wait. Oh, no, he did pitch. He pitched in the 10-0 game. He gave up no he gave up two hits in five innings and struck out 13 and walked one in a 10-0 win in the regional final in the division final. So they're in the regional now, which is on the 6th. So he's just dominant. Like, no one touches him. And honestly, this team is incredible. They just keep, like, they just outpitch everyone, really.
Honestly, one of the weirdest things, one of the craziest things, you're talking about throwing multiple no-hitters in a week and everything. One of the craziest things to me is, like, oh, you're in regionals in May. Mm-hmm. The end of April, yeah. Really.
Freaking they threw crazy. Two no-hitters back-to-back. They didn't give up a hit in back-to-back games and gave up two runs.
I feel so, like that's something that could work well with the Mets. He can continue applying that well here.
He almost got DeGrommed in the 2-1 win on the 22nd because he pitched. He didn't even get the win. Someone else did because he came out and they scored. So their next game is a regional quarterfinal, and I'm assuming I could see him pitching that because it's 6 days after the last game. But also, yeah, they might want to save him because the team is 8-17-1, so they might just want to save him and pitch someone else. So I don't know, but we'll look and be updated. Yep. But yeah, that's how it's going for him. He struck out like 30 people in the last two outings and has given up two hits.
That'll play.
He seems to get a little walk heavy sometimes, but I wonder if that's just him trying to get people to like swing at pitches out of the zone, like curveballs and stuff, and they're just not doing it because they don't want – he's just fooling them.
I mean, after a while, if you're just that dominant, you must get bored and start just going around at some point.
Yeah, like he could be working on pitches too and walking dudes because it doesn't really matter. Like once he's in crunch time, he could just throw whatever he's been throwing.
Ken, how is Adrian Del Castillo?
Well, it's been another down week. Still very consistent. But everything's down about 10 points. He's at 293, 393, 442 for the season. And in his last four games, he is 3-15. So the power still hasn't come along. Just kind of hitting mostly for average. Pretty much even to slightly below, and I think he's more likely to go in the bottom half of the first round now.
Simply trade back and get him.
It's just odd that a guy that was so hyped.
Yeah.
Is just, again, not really struggling, because it's not really struggling, but just not performing to expectations, I guess is the better way to put it, without no real noticeable change in anything.
Yeah.
It's a little odd.
I mean, it happens, but...
And I mean, like I just said, despite this... First of all, I think I was the person who's been lowest on him the whole time due to the lack of power, and I still... don't get why they would take either of the pitchers that they've been mocked over Del Castillo, even with the struggles.
Yeah, me neither. If that's what we're looking at, I would take him instead.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, he's still got another month or so.
I still think the power is in there. Like he's well below his career norms.
Right.
I don't know.
Like I don't even. We could probably have a longer debate about that point. I don't know that I have a particularly strong take on it, but even as is, I'd prefer him to control over stuff righty or another righty who can't throw a strike, which is what the Mets are being mocked right now, just because they have a reputation for liking college starting pitching.
Yeah, I mean, I like we said, I would definitely go with him over them, just because you know that inside there somewhere, whatever it is that's just kind of causing this kind of power drought and extended slump that he's in right now with that. It's in there somewhere.
I wonder if I haven't watched him enough to see, like, if you could unlock some of it, the power. But do you really want to do that with your first round pick? Like, take a guy you got to immediately fix, you know? But, I mean, they did that with Pete, because Pete's swing was totally different in college, and here we are. He's a good first baseman now. So, but he was also a second round pick.
Still, but still similar. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Like, I don't know. I don't want to call it a project because that's harsh, but you're probably going to have to change whatever the guy comes with anyway, because
he's going to have to, you know, develop some type of like mechanism to get into the power, you know?
I wonder if like the Mets see that or not. Like, I don't know what they even look for in any of things like that. So it'll be curious.
My argument is that once you're into this range of the draft, like, there's usually a first tier, and then when you're in that second tier, everyone usually has flaw. Yes. Mm-hmm. So I don't worry too much about the idea of having something to fix. There are certain things I'm less willing to try and fix than others. But the idea that, okay, we got to mess with your swing a little bit to fix X, Y, and Z, it's like, okay, well, that's everyone we draft here.
We just had the NFL draft where it's like the first three rounds are contributors right away.
Right.
And then, so I'm kind of in the mode where like 10th overall should be a star. But like, that's just not how baseball works.
10th overall gets you Justin Fields, apparently, because NFL teams are just mind-bogglingly stupid.
So like, it's just funny to see the differences like really in there, like as we're talking, because you're right. Like, the 10 spot is a spot where you're going to have to do some work with the guy to get them to where he needs to be.
Well, of all of these guys that we've picked and then discussed, I think Del Castillo is the most intriguing, just based on everything that's been going on and expectations and what's happened.
Oh, yeah.
The most interesting story of everybody.
It's really interesting that what's happened to him so far this year. What year is he in college? Is he a senior?
A junior, I think.
He's a junior.
A junior, okay. Because I'm trying to think of his age, too, but he's not too old.
He's technically a sophomore, because they gave him
a year. Got you. Okay.
He's a COVID sophomore. All right, so normally we would do our CPBL, KBO, NPB update, but unfortunately, just going to have to skip over that this week because I was not around, you know, Friday and Saturday and then I got home pretty late on Sunday to even look up and recap anything. So we'll get back to that next week.
Going
to
do a 2 week one next week?
No.
We're just gonna vibe into it.
Gotcha. We'll just pretend this week never happened.
Yeah, rainouts, guys. It's just pouring all over.
Monsoon season
everywhere.
Monsoon season actually does start soon.
Exactly.
Out there, so maybe it came a little early. Who knows? All right, so we have a little bit of roster news, Mets minor league roster news to discuss this week. First is a pair of signings, really one signing and then one waiver claim. So the signing that the Mets made was inking right-handed reliever Bradley Roney to a minor league contract. He was drafted by the Braves out of the University of Southern Mississippi 2014. He worked his way up through their system. He didn't make it to the majors, though. Then he became a free agent last year. He signed with the Diamondbacks, and then they released him at the end of March after spring training. Very relieverish guy, you know, fastball sits in the mid-90s, pretty good arm side movement on it because his delivery, you know, three-quarter arm slot, very flicky mechanics, complements it with a slurve and a circle change, and same thing, they both have a decent amount of movement because of the arm slot and the mechanics. But command is subpar. The delivery, it's kind of high energy. There's a lot of movement. And the pitches, they just seem to have like a natural high spin rate and they move. So he has a career 12.7 strikeout per nine rate over the course of his minor league career and a cumulative 6.3 walk per nine rate. So
not
great.
Two true outcomes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the strikes rather walks you.
Most of his professional innings were in Double A and then Triple A, so he's probably going to go to the Syracuse bullpen, I guess.
Yeah, I would assume so.
Very Carlos Marmol of him, you know, that kind of.
Oh, there's a name I haven't heard in a while.
Steve, I'm an infinite repository of useless facts and tidbits.
He does seem Carlos Marmolian, though, so yeah.
Difference is Marmol did that. It was able to limit that enough to be effective as a major leaguer for a couple seasons at least.
Yes. This fellow, no, not yet.
Honestly, if someone strikes out that many dudes, you probably sign them anyway. It's free.
Yeah, I mean, guys like that, that, you know, it's always a gamble. And
yeah.
And then the other guy that they got, the guy that they picked off of waivers, is Davey Grullón, who is a catcher, and they claimed him from waivers off of Tampa Bay. He was originally signed by the Phillies as an international free agent in 2012, and then he worked his way up through their system. He won a couple of All-Star nominations. He won the 2018 Eastern League Home Run Derby, and he got ranked on some Phillies top prospect lists by a couple of major publications. 2019, September, he got a Major League cup of coffee, and the Phillies DFA'd him in 2020, and Boston picked him up, and he spent a little bit of time there at the end of the 2020 season. Then Cincinnati claimed him off of waivers over the winter, and then they gave him up when they needed to make roster space, so Tampa claimed him. And then they DFA'd him last week, and now he's a Met. So in the last, like, 2 years, this guy's been a lot of places. But he's actually a kind of intriguing player.
He is their third best catcher.
Yeah, it's kind of sad.
He is immediately better than Patrick Mazeika.
Well,
yeah, I mean,
the bar
like,
is not that hard.
It sounds like ridiculous, but if someone gets hurt, I'd rather him be up behind Nino than anyone else they have. So
absolutely,
he has like some pop. He could throw.
Fine. Yeah, behind the plate, he has a strong arm. It's accurate. He's pretty good at blocking pitches. He's mobile. He frames pitches all right. At the plate, he's a little less impressive, but he's not exactly a defense-first catcher either. He does have some pop, like you said. In 2018, he hit 21 homers in Redding, and he hit 21 homers again in 2019 in Lehigh Valley. And you can't completely write off that many homers, like they're nothing. But
yeah, no, you don't hit that many home runs with back.
The stadium in Redding, it's very hitter-friendly. And then 2019, we had that whole weirdness with the new International League ball. So you can't ignore all 20 homers. Maybe you could subtract a few. But even if you subtract a few, that's still mid-double-digit home run power, which is,
And he's only 25, so.
Yeah.
He's like, he also still has options, which makes his passing around very odd to me.
Yep.
He's like Mike Zunino on a budget, basically.
Yeah, that's good.
Full side right-handed pop and some good – and some. I mean, not Zunino's level of defense, but
yeah.
Probably
good defense. If he turns into Mike Zunino, jeez.
Yeah, I mean, that's great.
Yeah. But, like, that's how catcher is. So.
Yeah. There seems to be a little disagreement about his defense because the scouting reports say it's been good, but BP's catching metrics for the minor leagues, which are admittedly – not as accurate as the major league model, weren't as positive the last time we had a lot of data. So I don't know how good the framing is, but the other aspects he's good at.
I know he has a cannon.
Yeah, I mean that's a lot easier to scout. And the fact that, first of all, the fact that he's getting passed around like this really highlights the question again of. Why the fuck is Patrick Mazeika still on the 40 man?
I don't know, man.
They are high on him. He's a good organizational guy, and they like him. But I don't think that can justify a spot on the roster.
The fact that they risked losing Killame instead of risking losing Mazeika was frightening. So,
mm-hmm.
I wonder if they were really, really scared about. I mean, he's not a catcher. I just want to say that right now.
Right,
Mazeika. But I wonder if they were just like, "Oh, we really can't be this thin at catcher," and then claiming someone like Gurion like helps. You know what I mean? Like, that's the only thing I could think of is that they were so worried about their catching depth. But he sucks and he can't catch, so it doesn't really matter that he's that. You know what I mean? Like, does depth matter if the depth is bad? Is the?
I mean, it's like the classic versatile defender or utility guy. Yeah, you can play lots of positions. Badly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
is that actually helpful?
Yeah, it's like when Jonathan Villar signed and they were like, he could play the outfield. It's like, well, he could stand there.
It's like, okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how good of an outfielder he actually is. But, like, that's a different example because he's probably better in the outfield than someone like Mazeika is a catcher. But I'm just saying that as a broad example. Like, I don't know. He might be on his way out soon because now they have a catcher, and then they have Caleb Joseph still, and they have Bruce Maxwell still, so he should be pretty decently down the catcher depth chart now that they should feel comfortable.
I totally forgot about Caleb Joseph.
How could you forget about noted catching extraordinaire Caleb Joseph?
Yeah.
Who's like 35.
Sounds like a catcher's name.
That's the most catcher name ever.
So, yeah, Grosjean is intriguing. Really, the only major flaw is that he can't hit. But if you had a catcher that had solid pop, above average to above average yeah. defense, and could hit, he'd be like a national Tosh prospect. So
yeah.
Obviously, he can't hit. You know,
exactly. So like,
it's a good combination of skills that he has.
190 with pop and plays defense, he could be a backup catcher for a while. So, which is depressing, but that's the state of it. So,
and you know, hopefully James McCann becomes a
don't get Thomas perennial started. All-star. Please don't get Thomas started on James McCann.
He's not good.
Here we go.
That's all I gotta say.
All right. Well.
I just want to say I've never seen two runs score on a passed ball.
That was bad.
Not even like a really bad passed ball. Like it not was even like a bad pitch.
It just like hit off his wrist. Like,
yeah. So now in defense, this like the fact that it was a passed ball was James McCann's fault. The second run really wasn't. Like that was just unlucky that it hit off the umpire. That shit happened.
Is that what happened?
Yeah,
because I haven't seen a replay. It hit off the umpire?
He missed it inside, and then it hit off the umpire's leg and went the opposite way you would
have
expected.
That's why it bounced like.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, one run, his fault. The second run is like, well, baseball.
Yeah, that's weird, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he whiffed on a pitch in the air.
Yes, no.
That's my bigger problem.
His position is called catcher.
Listen, there's nowhere to go but up from here, so.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Blue skies ahead.
He has a good arm.
Blue skies
ahead. He has a good arm. He has great pop time.
Support for this episode comes from Locker Room, the app that's changing the way we talk sports. Locker Room is a sports fan's dream come true. It's a live audio platform that lets you connect with other fans, experts, and even the athletes themselves. Locker Room makes it easy to start your own conversations. Talk about the latest rumors, takes, news, and teams you care about most. Join massive watch parties for all of your friends to react together in real time as you celebrate a buzzer beater or suffer the agony of a crucial bricked free throw. And if you've got a bunch of supremely spicy takes you'd like to fire off, you're in luck. You can even record the conversations if you want and release them as a podcast. So it's time to start thinking about catchy titles. It's all totally free and available at the iOS App Store right now. So go download it today. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports.
All right, so the season is about to begin. Minor league season is about to begin. And it is time for one of my favorite things, minor league predictions. Hope springs eternal on opening day. Anything is possible. And some of the predictions that we made in years past certainly shows that we thought anything was possible. I did not go back and read and listen to like every single one that we did, so I can't give an exact number, but I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that our success rate is probably like 15%, maybe.
I don't even remember my bold predictions, if I'm being totally honest.
Oh yeah, I don't either.
I just know that my prediction at the beginning of the 2019 season, I said Peter Alonso would win Rookie of the Year, and he did. And
nailed it.
Pete Alonso won Rookie of the Year. I don't know who this Peter individual is.
At the time, he was still Peter Alonso. But, yeah, occasionally we get things right that probably are pretty obvious. But it doesn't take the fun out of it that we're wrong most of the time. I think we were all surprisingly optimistic this year, I gotta say.
Steve, I put a downer one in there.
Oh, okay, well, I was just like, we've had some predictions in the past, like, this team is going to be the worst in the league, this guy's going to get demoted, you know, he's going to be pitching out of the bullpen by the end of the year. This year, not so much, just a little bit from Lucas, but, and I wouldn't call us necessarily an optimistic bunch, but...
We kind of kept it in line here.
Yeah, I mean, nothing but sparkles and rainbows right now, so... I give it maybe a week before we are complaining about how these teams suck. But at least we're not complaining about how much Vegas sucks at 1 o'clock in the morning.
That's true.
I mean, ultimately, everything always comes back to that. All right, so we all made three predictions. Some a little mild, some a little spicy, some nothing was atomic hot, really. So does anybody want to volunteer to go first with one?
I'll start with a nice, optimistic one.
All right.
Matthew Allen is the consensus number one in the system by the middle of the season. Not at the end of the season. By the middle of the minor league season.
You know, I agree, because I think I already had him number one.
I think you did, yes.
I'm on board, yes.
I already have him penciled in as one in my top 25 for next year now. So I just think he's just going to dominate. Like, it might not even be because of anyone else being bad. Like, it might just be because he's real good. You know what I mean? Like, it's just one of those things. He looks great.
He's absolutely going to be dominant. I mean, think about it. If Harold Gonzalez can almost win the pitching triple crown in Brooklyn, what can Matthew Allen do?
I think mine... Not that I want to set an order here, but my first one was very much in line with this. I had Allen as a top 30 prospect global by the end of the season.
That would be one unless some crazy shit happens. But
well, I mean, I think if he's performing well enough to be a top prospect in the system, I think that's reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
Like last time we saw him, he was dominating people with a good fastball. Really nice curveball. It's about as prototypical a prep pitching prospect as you could want. The only thing he's lacking is the super high end velocity. Right.
And I mean, look at Jacob DeGrom. You could develop that, apparently.
Right. I mean, if there's something that you can learn with just strength, right? Like velocity might be it. And that's obviously different person to person.
Yes.
I think he's real good.
Yeah. I'm very excited to see how he looks this year.
And you can kind of, I think to also support this argument is the idea that he would be higher now than he currently is had we had an actual season, right? Like this is, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. would have been the normal timeline for his rankings progression, basically. But we didn't have actual data, so everything was more stagnant than usual. So I think it's possible that he's actually already the 70th, 80th best prospect, and the gap from there to 30 isn't as big as people think.
So he's currently number 79 on Baseball Prospectus's top 101.
Oh, okay, there it is. So,
and we have like no information on him really to speak of, other than, you know, a few looks from the end of the 2019 season. I don't think it's a stretch to say that he could easily, on talent, you know, given the lack of information and everything, he could be maybe around 50 right now.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, performs a little bit in front of full season, you know, talent. And, yeah, no, I think that's pretty reasonable. Optimistic, but reasonable.
Yeah, it's not. It's definitely not, like, expected. I don't want to say not expected, but it's optimistic because that's also a lot.
Also runs right into – should we just do all of our Allen?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Might as well.
Yeah, so I think that Matt Allen's going to pitch in double A this year.
Oh, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
I agree
so
with
Brooklyn
that.
Is advanced A now, and I just don't think there's any way he doesn't get – you know, dominate to the point where they have to move him up.
You originally said – Triple A, and I actually think that's true also.
I thought if this wasn't spicy enough, I'd bump it up. I don't think that's unreasonable either. Like
that's definitely optimistic, but I could see him dominating Double A for a little bit, like coming right up. And
part
just
of how I'm
just
thinking about a lot of this is I just kind of treat it like algebra. You know, you fill in an outcome for what the missing year was, and you mm-hmm. see where that puts you now. Like, if he went to Savannah, or not Savannah, wow, old cut. Oh. He went to Columbia.
Oh, Savannah. Oh, the Sand Nats, baby.
Season and shoved there, you know, maybe he ends up in advanced A by the end of the 2020 season. And
yep.
then he's just.
Also, these
know,
levels are different. Now,
jump away.
As we've said about times.
Exactly. So he's going to be in high A. If he pitches well enough there early enough, maybe he gets the double A. Early enough where he can make the next jump too.
I kind of want to be selfish and I don't want him to pitch in double A at all this year. I want to see him in.
You're so close to, yeah.
Brooklyn the whole year just because I want to see, you know, a bona fide, genuinely really talented, really high end, good pitcher pitch a whole season in Coney Island.
You know, it's going to be really fun.
I can't honestly recall the last guy, like the last real legit top prospect pitcher guy that spent a lot of time in Brooklyn.
Especially before, it was just hard that it was just hard to keep guys there because of it was like kind of an in-between thing and it was a short season.
I guess the last greatest, the greatest pitcher I guess I ever saw in Coney Island was when I went to see Jason Vargas' rehab start.
Oh, I saw Noah Syndergaard there a few times. Mm.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. I've seen
lining
him
up against the Staten Island Yankees.
Yes, the Staten Island Yankees.
Yeah, but Jason Vargas. I mean, come on, he's Jason Vargas.
I can't wait for when it's like 30 degrees at night in April in Brooklyn. And he has to, like, and he's pitching, and these poor kids are just, like, miserable trying to face him. Like, everything hurts as soon as you make contact, and you barely make contact anyway. So he's just going to, man, he's going to shove there. Mm.
And also partially why I'm selfish and I don't want to see him go.
Oh, because I don't want to go until, like, June.
My prediction is going to be that the Brooklyn Cyclones are going to win their second straight championship, and they're going to be the inaugural High A East champions.
Okay, so if they win that, I need the T-shirt
says, yeah.
Uh-huh. Like, Northeast, Northwest, Southwest.
Oh, no!
Like, it's going to be incredible. The patch High on the side of the helmet, on the side of the hat, is going to be the whole thing.
Man, I can't wait till Kanye West's kid becomes a professional baseball player and Northwest is playing in the Southeast East West division. What? Who's on first?
But I mean, there's gonna be that team is gonna be really good. I mean, we said that a couple of years ago about Columbia, and that didn't really work out. But this is also gonna be like almost a super team, and Matthew Allen will be a big part of that. Ronnie Mauricio, Brett Beatty, and Matthew Allen, they're all starting the year in Brooklyn.
JT coming in.
Three teams, I didn't even factor him in, but yeah.
I would assume he starts there.
Three guys right now. Ginn might be added. That's another top 10 prospect that would be added in. And then, you know, Pete Carroll Armstrong and Francisco Alvarez, they're going to be in St. Lucie. And
Jake Mangum's there.
There's a good chance that they get promoted. And then, yeah, you have a lot of guys that performed well last year are coming back. Antoine Duplantis, Jake Magnum, Mangum, Joe Ginord, Luke Ritter.
I do that all the time.
I know.
When he was first drafted, I read it as Magnum, and I was very disappointed when I realized I was incorrect.
Me too. Me too.
Jake Magnum, come on the show.
Friend of the podcast.
Pitching might not necessarily be a strength for that team after Allen, but Coney Island could turn anybody into a good pitcher, so it doesn't really matter. And I think that a big difference between like this team full of a lot of good prospects and the 2019 Fireflies is that the manager, Ed Blankenmeyer, we spoke about him a couple of weeks ago. You know, he's longtime manager of St. John's Baseball, great record. And just, you know, as a manager, he's spent his entire career coaching, you know, kids like 18 to 21. So he knows like the psychology that comes with that. He knows, you know, how to just deal with young kids that he's going to be managing, which, you know, sometimes other managers, maybe not so much. So you heard it here. Brooklyn, High A East, East-West champions. All right. Who has our next non-Matthew Allen related?
You want to just go in order, like that we're just on?
Yeah, sure.
So mine is that the Mets minor league system as a whole will have a combined winning record. I don't think that it is a typically good minor league system, but like I could see Binghamton being a good team with no prospects on it, if that makes sense. Like they'll be like a good double A team with no one really to write home about major league wise, but they'll win 85 games because it's just a bunch of dudes who'll win at double A, you know? So like, I could see them doing stuff like that where they'll win a lot of games across the board, but the prospect system is kind of whatever. Like the prospect pool is still all the guys in the low minors who are just coming up and all that stuff. But I think Brooklyn is going to win a lot, and I could see St. Lucie being pretty solid. And I think Binghamton is a dark horse to be a contending team, even though they don't have really any type of like major league talent on it, except for like Vientos. You know what I mean?
The ponies are going to be a dark horse. I see.
I did that totally by accident. But yeah. So like, I could kind of see them just being a competitive organization, even if they don't have the best minor league system, because that doesn't sometimes one doesn't equal the other. Like you could have a bunch of top prospects and the rest of the dudes are terrible, and it doesn't matter. So like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I hope so, because
that'll be fun.
Yeah, and obviously
I'm gonna track it. I'm gonna add up the stuff every like I'll track it every month and be like, how are the records going?
The fans need to go home happy, and we as people recapping every single game, it makes our lives much more enjoyable and happier when.
Oh yeah, there's a few. There was a few teams where I'm just like, bro, you're like 30 and 90. I don't want to recap this game. And it's just like, yes, they got lit up again. They couldn't hit. Come back next time.
In 2019, when like I was doing the reviews of season reviews for St. Lucie, I was just like, I don't even know what to do. I feel like one of the highlights was the season was like the stadium lighting on fire.
That team was really bad.
Yeah. One of the highlights was that they ended the season early because there was a hurricane coming. So it's like, well, one of the highlights is that they.
I remember that.
Lose. Yeah.
I remember that.
So, yeah, it's much, much, much more enjoyable when the teams, even if they don't have, like, notable players, if they still just win. Winning baseball.
One of my recapping highlights, if we're going to go down that rabbit hole, is Aaron Laffey giving up, like, 12 runs in 3 innings and retiring in the postgame. Like, and in Vegas, no less, because so it was, like, 1 a.m., and I'm just like, did this man retire after the game?
I'm a head out, guys, and go hit the slots. You have fun.
He said, oh, that's what it's like? Goodbye.
It's like, well, I wasn't sure or not if I still had it. Clearly I don't.
I know now.
I'm out.
But yeah, That's, I think, maybe my boldest prediction, just because there's a lot of whatever teams, but I could see them, like that Brooklyn Cyclones team wasn't necessarily filled with prospects, but, like, those dudes know how to win, and they win baseball games, even though, like, Jake Mangum isn't, like, a superstar. Like, he's going to win games in the minor leagues. So, like, that is what it is.
He is a proven winner.
I mean, it's, I hate that stuff, but, like, he has all that intangible stuff that I don't know how to figure out.
All right, Lucas, what is your next prediction?
So, should I do the negative one now or save the negative one for the last round?
Do it last.
Yeah, so let's not ruin things now.
Okay, so
we want to end on that note.
End on me being a Debbie Downer, as usual. Okay, so my second positive one is that Jordani Ventura is going to be a top 10 prospect in the system by the end of the season. So I think post Lindor trade, the back of the top 10 kind of opened up a lot. And currently I think it's Palmer, who I also like a lot and considered doing a bold prediction about him. But to be a little bit spicier, I wanted to find an IFA that I thought would break out, and I'm very intrigued by Ventura.
It's a good shout.
Yeah, like, to be clear, he's probably not the kind of I don't want to ever call any of these very far away guys not high ceiling, because any of them could get like a velo spike and become high ceiling. But he's probably not that. But he has reasonably good control. He had some really cool TrackMan numbers when he reached Kingsport. That was as a 19-year-old before COVID. So the arrow was pointing distinctly up before the shutdown. Fangraphs disagrees with me a little bit. According to Eric, he got some less good reports when he was doing background. But I still think there's a foundation here for an interesting, like, middle of the rotation starter, someone who already has full season experience, someone who has some interesting stuff data. And really, most of these, like, IFA, but I think ex-IFA is going to break out. Most of the time, it's just kind of hunch-based, if we're being totally honest with ourselves. So that's just the way I'm leading with it. I think he'll be something notable by the end of the season.
Fair.
I don't even think you're wrong. That's bold, but it's also very much in the realm of possibilities.
I mean, it's helped by the fact also that the Mets still do not have a particularly deep system. So, yeah. Right, like, the back of the top 10 is going to be fungible. There are a couple other names that merit mentioning in that discussion, too, like Robert Dominguez, any of the outfielders. Like, could be one of those guys, I think, but I chose Ventura.
I'm going to jump in front of you, Ken, for a second here in this round, because my prediction is very similar to Lucas's, so I feel like lumping them together makes more sense, if you don't mind.
Oh, no. By all
means. Ken's going to rage quit off the show because of this.
Damn it. But my prediction is that Elian Nunez is going to be in our top 25 prospect list in 2022, next year. He was a guy that the Mets signed this past June, so he's a 2021 IFA. And if you guys recall, the Mets did not sign anybody for $1 million or more. Everybody was six-figure values or less. And we don't have the exact numbers yet right now, but, I mean, he's possibly even a five-figure bonus guy, who knows.
Mm-hmm.
But, Ben Badler from Baseball America, he always has the insider hookups for all things international free agent related. And in his previews, he was saying that, you know, when the Mets are looking at him, which is, I guess, at this point, like 2 years ago, because of COVID and everything, but he was sitting like the high 80s. But now the pitch sits in the low 90s, and it's been clocked as high as 97 when he really, you know, airs it out. So even
wow,
if you take,
I didn't know that.
Even if you take a few grains of salt with that, you know, deduct a couple of miles per hour, a 16-year-old that sits low 90s and maybe can hit, you know, 94, 95, that's still definitely really good.
Yeah, that's something.
And he's 6'2", 170, so there's still room to grow and fill in and just, you know, mature. And then he pairs it with like a power, upper 70s power curve that has a high spin rate, tight break. I haven't seen any clips of that pitch. I have seen the fastball. You do it has some pretty good arm side movement. And also I like the delivery that he has. It's like all arm. It's very explosive though. So, you know, the team might be able to get some more velocity out of him in addition to growing from just kind of refining the mechanics and everything.
Yeah, I mean, 16 years old, that's the time to fix their mechanics, right? It's not like it's a college guy who's been throwing this way for years.
Look, if you're 16 and throw mid-90s, you're probably making it on the 25.
All right, well, my question is, what team has Wilmer Font currently, and how soon can I trade Elliot Nunez for him?
Good idea. Let's find out. But, yeah, that is a... that is a thing that
he's pitching in the KBO. So,
all right, we're trading this guy to the KBO for Wilmer Font. Let's
trade
go.
Him to the Landers.
Yeah,
where that big L. That's an
and
L.
He's not had a good start.
But I'm not being as bold as Lucas here, especially because there's just so much more unknown about Nunez. But I think that he will end up on the top 25 list, probably in that 20 to 25 area. Because there's, you know, like he was saying before, there's just so much fungibility in that zone. I mean, this year that group of players is Sam McWilliams, Adrian Hernandez, Stanley Consuegra, Andy Rodriguez, Jordan Ventura, and Riley Gilliam. Andy is already gone, and those four other guys, you know, could either go up. In Ventura's case, hopefully he goes up to the top 10. Or those other guys might just come off the list completely. So Nunez is super young, you know, and the odds that he even plays anywhere other than the DSL are extremely slim. But there's a lot to like. And with the thinness of the system at the bottom there, I think you can make the case.
It has big, we put him 25 because he's the most exciting young guy vibes. You know what I mean?
It has big, Steve sticks him in at 25 to make his bold prediction come true.
And we're just like, it seems like, oh, remember who was right last year? And we're like, oh, damn it.
This guy.
Ah, shit, you found my plan.
Uh-huh.
Well, I think the one that did invent that kind of thing that we did started doing was Ken. So, Ken, go ahead and give us your last prediction.
So it's actually about a former 25th best prospect in the system for that very reason. I think Francisco Alvarez is going to be the best catching prospect in baseball by the end of the season. And the main reason I think that's true is because all of the guys ahead of him already have big league service time.
Yeah.
And are likely to graduate. So Adley Rutschman doesn't have big league service time, but he's already in AA, and I think it would be pretty egregious if he's healthy and he doesn't make it to the big leagues this year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who else do the Orioles have?
Pedro Severino and who the hell is their other dude? He's been there forever.
The ghost of Matt Wieters.
No, neither should be a reason to not. No. Have Adley Rutschman on
Chance Sisko.
He's still there?
I think so.
That wouldn't surprise me.
After Rutschman, there's Joey Bart, who is 29th on Baseball Prospectus's top 101. And
he'll probably be up.
I
mean, actually, maybe not.
He got time last year, and but Posey, I think it's a like pretty safe bet. To
Posey's been so good, I wonder if they just keep him down all year.
Maybe. I'm willing to bet that he ends up. At least graduating. I don't know if he'll be there all year, but he's already got some time. He presumably doesn't need all that much more. Then there's Luis Campusano from the Padres.
He's already up.
Already has big league service time and is already up. Then there's Keibert Ruiz, who might be the most challenging to overtake because he doesn't really have a clear path to playing time with the Dodgers having Will Smith and Austin Barnes. But I think Alvarez might just be better than him. And same with the guy after him, Shea Langeliers.
I always thought it was Langeliers.
I always thought it was Langeliers as well.
Like the Stephen King book.
Regardless, I never really bought into him being all that good. And I think,
me neither.
A pretty good showing in full season ball, you know, could easily shoot Alvarez up lists. So
it sounds crazier when you say it than, because when you put it in the thing in the group chat that we have, I was like, oh boy, that's a hot one. And then you explained it, I was like, oh, actually, that's not at all. Like,
yeah,
that's totally believable.
Everybody who's like clearly better than him at this point in time is going to graduate, and you know, there's two guys who could theoretically be better than.
There are a couple other hot catching names I could see getting into his tier as well. Diego Cartaya is an interesting one. I had another name prepared for this, and it's slipped my mind. But I don't think it's as outlandish as it sounds initially.
Yeah, like Thomas just said, when you lay it out and you give the exact like formula almost for him to get from where he is to being the best catching prospect in baseball, it makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
All right. Let us go now, start round three, our last projection. Prediction, excuse me. Thomas?
My last one, I think this is a little bit of a hot take, but that the Mets system as a whole gets bumped nationally after the season. And the reason why I say that is because so much of their talent is so young that now that we'll start to see them play more, that if this kind of takes everyone being good, obviously, but also having a strong draft because they pick at 10 and you could conceivably get someone good. Like, I could see them getting some love in the national section if, like, a few of their IFA guys pop and if some of our other predictions come true, like Alvarez becoming the best catching prospect in baseball and Allen popping so much that he overtakes, like, a Mauricio and all them, he would move up into probably the top 30 and other things like that. So this is kind of a culmination of all of our takes. If all of them come true pretty much, then I could see them being, like, maybe a middle-of-the-road system instead of a bottom-tier system. Which, I mean, if they're a middle-of-the-road system at the end of the year, I'm overjoyed at how this has gone so far. You know what I mean? Like, perspectively speaking, that's great. So, I'm not saying they're going to be top 10, top 5 in elite system. But I'm saying, like, I could see them getting a little more love because more of the players that we look at and we're excited about are getting more just they're playing. And they're starting to be put out in front of everyone.
Although, to be fair, the ceilings of some of the players that are on in the team, if everybody, let's say, performed well past expectations and all of the players popped all at once, it could be a top five system. Why not?
It could. Like, that's
the talent
in the realm
is there.
Of possibility.
Yeah. The talent like, is
it,
in theory.
It could get crazy. Yeah. For sure. It'll be fun to see because it's like almost like a big mold of clay right now that we don't really know what it is yet because all these kids are like 18, 19 that we talk about. And even Allen is young. Even we talk about him with such security.
He also looks like a 40-year-old soccer
player. He does, yeah.
He does.
He straight up looks like he should be in the majors by now, like physically and in his face.
He looks
but he's
like
young.
He should be running accounts for like Bear Stearns or something.
Yeah, he really does. So it's that's my biggest prediction, I would say, is that they get a little more love nationally.
Well, like you're saying, for that to happen, everyone needs to pop. And Lucas, I think that you think someone might not be.
Yeah. I mean, this one isn't going to surprise many people. My prediction is that Ronnie Mauricio is going to be a disappointment this season. So I've definitely had this rant a couple times. This is not a profile I particularly care for. I feel like scout types have a tendency to see long levers or skinny dude playing at being young for the level and not looking awful and immediately extrapolate that to, oh, he's going to fill out, learn how to hit, look at how good he is already relative to his age. And he's going to be a star. Where in reality, that's a pretty rare outcome, I feel like. And I'm not comparing Mauricio to Ahmed Rosario in terms of exact skills, but it's the same sort of argument there, right? Like, Ahmed was rated highly because young, always young for his level, has this good-looking frame, performed reasonably well, but just never learned how to hit or hit for power or even really play competent defense, despite the physical tools.
Other than that.
Other than that, though, how's the player? Yeah. Then
you're not wrong, though.
There's the idea of, like, Mauricio had, like, a quadrant of outcomes, one axis for defensive outcome, one axis for offensive outcome. And now, since he's huge, he's going to be shifting down the defensive spectrum already. So he's already going towards the wrong side of one of those axes. And he still has never hit for power. I think there's an assumption that he's going to do those things, and I find that we make that assumption about this sort of player too often. So I am expecting him to be a disappointment this year.
Well, fair. I mean, the logic is there. We might not agree necessarily, but
yeah,
it is a well-made case.
I still like him, but if this happens, I wouldn't be shocked. You know, like, it's definitely in a big-time part of his possibility. I still think he's going to be fine, and I think he'll be a good prospect. But I see why you think that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, you don't have to twist my arm to get me to see your point of view. Like, I'm definitely like, yeah, okay. If that happens,
I'll be trade chip number one for me if I'm the Mets and I want to make a splash somehow, right? Like, maybe
I also think he's trade chip number one for the Mets.
Yeah, because I don't want to move Allen.
Yeah,
I think that'd be an off-season thing.
To the outfield.
Yeah.
See, I don't want them to do that, though, yet. Keep him at shortstop. If you're going to trade him, you'd rather trade a shortstop than a right fielder.
Yeah.
Pretty true.
If, like, the name that pops immediately into my head is if in some world Matt Chapman's available, I'm calling Oakland up and saying, Marty Mauricio?
Yep. Guys like that. J-Ram, guys like that.
Yeah.
Or instead of trading Ronnie Mauricio, hear me out. What if they trade Francisco Lindor?
I heard you could get Andrés Giménez and Ahmed Rosario for him. But
I would trade Francisco Lindor for Jose Ramirez. Ducks.
I think that Andrés Giménez trade value right now is a little bit higher. He still has more home. I think he still has more home runs than Lindor.
He has more home runs.
He does, but he looks awful.
Yeah.
He looks like.
He somehow doesn't look as bad as Ahmed.
Yeah, right? They both look just bad. That's rough. It's rough all around right now. Rough for everyone. But I trust the 27-year-old superstar to figure it out more than Ahmed Rosario or Andrés Giménez.
I trust Giménez to be like a second-tier starter.
Yeah.
Which is fine. And I will still trade that for Lindor.
Oh, yeah. All right, well, my final prediction this year is that Thomas Zupacki is going to get called up at some point during the 2021 season, and that he is going to receive Rookie of the Year votes.
Ooh. Now it's spicy.
That's a spicy meat the ball.
I didn't say he's going to win. I just said he's going to get some votes.
That's all still right. Spicy.
But still. But
okay, so how do you envision this happening?
He supplants Edwin Diaz's closer, obviously.
Oh boy.
Who's Diaz's elite anyway, so it doesn't matter. But
if you look at some of the guys that have gotten like that 1% of the vote share in a couple of years past, the bar is not super high. So
I mean,
I think
yeah.
I think if he's just one person to click the wrong name, a la Ryan Tepera. So who's the closest name in baseball to Zupacki? Like
that's difficult though because there aren't many. Maybe like somebody will do like a prank vote just because his last name is so cool.
Maybe.
But also, maybe, like, you know, he could come up and strike out like 11 per 9 or something.
Who is like the most
like a fireman reliever?
Who's the most patriotic Polish member of the BWA?
We often ask this question.
Yes, and these are things that we need to know.
We don't know his name, but he's a friend of the pod.
I hope he's
going to write in.
Hope he's listening now and get some ideas. But Basically, I like that one. With Zupacki, it's like been one thing after another ever since he came back from Tommy John. I watched a show about one of the greatest of all time, Rowdy Roddy Piper, the other day, and it reminded me of one of like his greatest quotes. And to paraphrase it, was Zupacki, just when we think we have all the answers about Thomas Zupacki, he changes all the questions. And back when he first came back in 2019, like early on, the fastball was in the high 80s, and that was problematic. But then the year went on, and he kind of shook off more of the rust, and then the fastball at the end of the year was comfortably sitting in the low 90s, you know, touching 94, 95. Then there wasn't a season, and then reports from Coney Island said that he was back into the high 80s again. Again, problematic. And then in spring training, and then subsequent reports from the alt side this year, he's sitting in the low 90s again, touching 94, 95.
His one appearance when the camera was on the Mars
on the moon,
roof.
Yeah.
So we couldn't see it.
Well, we needed NASA to develop their helicopter sooner so they could get 40 feet off the ground and give us a better angle.
So, like, he might be the dude I want to see the most.
Yeah. Now,
even if he's not, like, obviously a top prospect or anything, just because it's been so long and there's been so many other, like, so many reports, and it's like you were just saying, mm-hmm. all the stuff that you were just saying, like, I just want to see it. Like, I want to go to a game or, like, log on to the app and watch him pitch and see what it looks like for myself and just be like, okay, I know what to expect from him now. You know what I mean? Like,
yep, exactly.
He might be the dude I'm excited to see the most for that reason, just because I don't know what he looks like anymore.
And then the curveball, you know, didn't look as crisp when I saw him in 2019. But we know between, you know, Anthony Kaye from a couple of years ago, Franklin Kilmeade last year, other guys with above average curveballs, it takes a little extra time to come back. And the changeup, he added that to his repertoire in 2016, and then he had surgery in 2017, so he never really had much time to develop it. But it did show a little bit of promise in the New York Penn League and then South Atlantic League in the very limited time that he was using it there.
Yeah.
So he's basically, you know, a fastball, curveball guy. He's a little bit on the older side, and, you know, he also has the injury history, the lack of relative innings. As we said many, many times on the show, a good compromise to get value from him, you know, would be to make him that kind of multi-inning reliever. Or I was thinking, actually, you know, with Noah Syndergaard coming back later in the year, an opener, if they want to have Zupacki go an inning or two and then have Syndergaard, you know, to limit Syndergaard's innings if they wanted to.
Jeez, that'd be nasty. Like, if Zupacki's back and he's good again,
mm-hmm.
have him open and here's Syndergaard.
Yep.
I mean, you could also do that with, like, Lucchese, and you could kind of get creative at the back end if you need to with guys like that.
Mm-hmm. But obviously there's no, you know, he doesn't have major league experience, but there's a good fastball, there's a good curveball. The left-handed slot is tough for everyone. I think that he could be a major leaguer. And I think that he can be good enough as a major leaguer in his debut to get some votes. He's not going to sniff first, second, or third this year.
He'll be like 10th or something.
Yeah, but the bar is not super, super tough to get literally that one vote. So, patriotic Polish writer out there, please do your duty and give him a single vote. Ken, what is your last prediction going to be?
So I think Brett Batty is going to walk in at least like 12% of his plate appearances.
Oh, yes, give me all the walk gods.
So we just strapping the rocket to him on the pod?
Not me.
I'm fine with it. You hate him. All three of us are going to be hyping him up, and Steve's going to be like, nope.
No, I'm actually, not to go on too much of a tangent, but I'm actually interested to see how he does in Brooklyn, in MCU
Park.
With that park,
yeah.
Right. The thing, he is really good at using the opposite field and hitting for power for the opposite field. So, you know, that the Atlantic wind might not really be stealing, you know, his power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. But
it might turn to a lot of doubles instead of homers.
Yeah, I think he's just going to hit for a lot of power, and with power comes walks, and really impressed me in 2019 when I saw him with the quality of the bats he was taking. So, I don't know. I see that happening.
He was very impressive. Yep. I mean, he was out of high school in 2019, and...
Well, he was already 40, so I guess.
Yeah, that is true. how many games was he in Brooklyn for? Like six, seven?
He wasn't long, yeah.
Now, Ken, let me ask a corollary to this. Do you think he's...
Go ahead.
No, do you think he's going to go like full TTO with it? Like, is it going to be 12% walk and like 28% strikeout? Or is it going to be something a lot more balanced?
No. I think he's always going to strike out a fair bit. I see maybe like 25%.
Yep. Yeah, that, I could agree with that. As long as you keep it below 30.
Yeah, 30 is kind of where you start getting nervous.
And you want a guy with his power to be aggressive. Mm-hmm. You know?
He'll make back the strikeout stuff with the power if he's aggressive and could reliably make that contact.
All right, well, you heard it here, folks. You heard it here first. A lot of good stuff is going to happen, except for freaking Lucas.
Look, I have a reputation to maintain here, Steve. I'm just doing my part.
I should make you the Will Pondery of the Week, but...
Wow, that's harsh.
But I won't, so... instead, so Will Pondery of the Week, I'll ask a question. Do you guys, you know, you like barbecues, right?
Yes.
Sure.
All right. We established last week this is a pro hot dog podcast.
You're gonna make me crave a hot dog again.
Do you like burgers? Do you like burgers? Yes. Do you like a nice steak?
I have no idea where this is going.
Me neither. I'm a little scared.
All right.
Well, I'm always scared when he goes off on the tangent. I have no idea where it's ending up.
Well, I hate to break it to you guys, but in Joe Biden's America, you can't have barbecues.
You're going there.
What? I think I missed this news piece.
The story was some university posted a study of what would it look like if we only ate 4 pounds of meat a year? Red meat.
Was it like the utopia picture? You know what I'm talking about?
Well, no, it's just like, what does this look like in terms of environmental impact if we only ate 40 pounds or 20 pounds or 4 pounds? Mm-hmm. And then somehow... That became Joe Biden's new climate plan.
Oh, no, what? How did I miss this?
Right?
It
wasn't actually, but it got into Fox News ecosystem of Joe Biden wants to take away your meat. And then you had a bunch of Republicans posting pictures with like 24-ounce steaks or whatever.
Yeah, I saw those. Okay, so I saw the big steaks and then being like, you can't take my steaks. And I was like, I'm not looking into this any further.
You know, that was probably the right decision.
I was just like, I don't care enough. This is obviously stupid.
Uh-huh.
Because I remember there was a picture of some of the steak. The steak was, like, bigger than the plate. And they were just like, let's go. And I was like, go where? Okay, I don't care anymore.
Don't forget, though, the most appropriate way, according to the God King, of eating a steak is well done with ketchup.
No, but... Oh.
Well done? I do like a well done steak, but ketchup?
What?
I can't with the well done steaks. It's not for me. Medium rare, baby.
Steve, please tell me you're joking.
I'm not joking. If it's not brown inside, I'm not too happy.
I feel like I knew you. and that feeling is gone. You think you know a person.
Listen, I don't put ketchup on it, at least.
Okay. Christ. Let it be known that we on this podcast do not know Steve's view on steaks are his own and not representative of the views of this podcast.
Well, good thing Joe Biden is taking away all of our steaks, so we don't want to have to deal with that.
This so mockery. Steve can't ruin them anymore.
Oh. Well, if anyone has any questions or comments, whatever, about my staking and habits, you can email us at fromcomplextoqueens@gmail.com or you can follow us on Twitter and do so there. I am at Steve Sipa. Lucas is at ElvLajos343. Ken is at KenLavin91. And Thomas is at SedMedSeason, SZN. Subscribe to the podcast or wherever you get your podcast from. Rate and review it. And, of course, thank you for listening. And we will be back next week with a fully reinvigorated From Complex to Queens, because there will be a minor league season for the first time in, like, 2 years. So it's a beautiful thing. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.